minutes after 11 o'clock. This is News Talk 610 CKTV and News Talk 1290 CJBK. I'll be simulcasting this show the rest of this week and next week, and then a week in August as Andy Udman takes some well-deserved vacation time. That's right! Some of us have to go on vacation to rest, to relax, to rejuvenate, to renew, to be reborn, so I can come in and deal with you people all morning. Wait a second. Shouldn't that be the other way around? Pam, Colleen, how are you?
I'm great. How are you today?
I am excellent. London listeners are well aware of you. So are our Niagara listeners. So it's natural that we'd have you on for both. Nothing like getting restored and renewed by a little vacation time. We reset the system and our brain get back to being hopefully healthy. We're not fried all the time. We're not beset by all the stresses and everything wearing us down. We need a little vacation time. Andy's getting a little renewed.
Ability to chillax, as kids say today. No, chillaxing is a very, very medicinal thing.
There you go. And so Andy is off for the next couple of weeks, and that's why I'm filling in London at the same time. Now, interesting, this week, many people looked at this as being decent news, but I looked at it, and I was like, okay, so we're a step closer. And I want to get into a bigger discussion on brain health and, I guess, dementia, but more deterioration of the brain. No society has magically lived beyond, let's say, 110, 120. Mm-hmm. It's inevitable. We will go through a decline. We would just like to be at our peak for as long as possible. They had a blood test to predict Alzheimer's. However, this is what was intriguing to me. The prediction was if within the next year. But Alzheimer's is not something you suddenly catch, for instance. It's not like West Nile or measles or anything like that. It's like, no, it's a slow declination down into it. That a prediction, as maybe these protein markers become more available in the blood, it's more likely that you'll have it. But it's not something that you just get one year. It is a slow, slow decline.
Right. And I know what it feels like, because when I had chronic fatigue, I was basically very, very ill throughout most of my 20s and my 30s. And one of the symptoms, other than debilitating fatigue and insomnia, brain fog, other than those symptoms, of course, one of the other symptoms I had was that I had no memory. I couldn't remember reading a sentence in a book. I'd read the sentence in the book and I'd have to reread it and reread it because I couldn't remember what I had just read. My memory was so bad that I would be driving somewhere and I'd have to pull over because I couldn't remember where I was going. And this is the kind of symptom that I'm seeing time and time and time again in young people. It doesn't have to be somebody in their 60s, 70s, 80s. Memory loss today is a really serious problem, and it is a red flag. It's showing that there's really something very physically wrong with that individual, and a lot of it has its roots in malnutrition.
All right, let me first go back. Chronic fatigue, do we have, is it a specific or is it more of a general catch-all? And what are some of the symptoms that you would exhibit if you suffer from chronic fatigue?
Okay, so chronic fatigue essentially is a fatigue that is unrelenting. It just doesn't escape the body or the mind. People can go to work 9 to 5 and have chronic fatigue. They can have what I call adrenal insufficiency or adrenal burnout, which is the root source essentially of the fatigue, because your adrenal glands are your body's batteries, and when they're wearing out, you're going to feel the brunt of that.
So would it
a
be
lot of people today have chronic fatigue and don't know it, so they can look on the outside that they're functioning quite normally, but inside they're just not feeling a lot of zest for life. They feel very apathetic. They feel lethargic. They have brain fog. They have memory problems. They have sleep issues. The list goes on and on. One classic symptom of chronic fatigue, of course, is when people wake up feeling very groggy in the morning. And they, have to have a couple of cups of coffee to wake up and get the cobwebs going, cobwebs cleared, I should say. And then at 9 or 10 o'clock at night, they get a second wind. So when they go to bed at night, they can't fall asleep. That's a very classic sign of chronic fatigue.
All right. Now, let me go back. So chronic fatigue, it's not something that all of a sudden it reminds me sort of depression, and I'm not mentioning this lightly at all, but where people don't, people who feel sadness sadness is a normal human emotion, and there are various reasons why we should be sad and express sadness. But depression and sadness depression is a mental health condition that is like sadness exacerbated over a long period of time. We should all be sad. We shouldn't be depressed. We should all be tired at some point, but we shouldn't have chronic fatigue. That if I'm tired over the weekend, what a weekend. It's one thing. But chronic fatigue, so it would be something that persists for, let's say, months at a time or years at a time?
Yeah, it can last for several months and years, of course. And it can creep on quite suddenly. So some people don't even notice this symptom simply because as a teenager, they might have had some energy. They may have woken up feeling refreshed in the morning. Their brain might have been very lucid, very clear. And then gradually in their 20s, they start to get more fatigue, depression, brain fog. They start having more trouble getting up in the morning. In their 30s, it gets worse. In their 40s, it's even worse then, and so on. So it's a gradual thing in many cases. And these are the people that I actually have more concern about, is because they lose the ability to have energy for their careers, for their relationships. Everything around them tends to crumble apart simply because they don't have the energy to try and keep the foundation together.
So what would be a typical, as you said, what are some of the typical symptoms? Unrefreshed sleep is one, as described. And as you said, it seems when your body clock is out of whack with the day clock, although I know that that's not really it. But as you said, waking up groggy, but then trying to go to bed when you are feeling refreshed for some reason. And then what else? Brain fog. Describe brain fog. What is brain fog?
Brain fog is that cobwebby feeling that people get in their brain. So it's kind of like everything in your life is going in slow motion. You know, is things are happening in front of you, but you're just, one step behind, one beat behind. And it's just a really mushy feeling in the brain. And I can't tell you how common this is today. And you can tell sometimes when you're talking to somebody that they have brain fog because they tend to have a very spacey look in their eyes. And some people can get away with it. Some people are really good at faking it, that they're, feeling very clear and so on, but they're not. And it's a big concern because, unfortunately, again, this does have an impact on the quality of one's life.
Is there an emotional aspect to it? I mean, does it come with mild depression, or are there other mental health problems with it other than bad memory?
Well, I think they go hand in hand. So chronic fatigue and depression are essentially the same thing. And I'm speaking from a biochemical standpoint. They're still the same thing. It's whether or not it's the perception that the person has on how they feel. So some people are going to label it depression. Other people are going to label it chronic fatigue. But biochemically speaking, they're the same thing. So when I do work with people, however, and their fatigue starts to improve, their depression starts to improve, it tends to happen it's a hand-in-hand type of thing. So as their energy starts improving, their mood improves, their zest for life improves, all sorts of other things improve. But the thing about chronic fatigue, Tom, is that it is extremely difficult to fix. Extremely difficult to fix.
Okay, well, let me ask you about... Mm-hmm. So depression we have, and I'm not advocating for this, although in some people it works, but I'm not advocating for, in terms of we have drug treatments for it. For instance, serotonin uptake inhibitors or whatever else is used for depression seem to work. But work on the depression chemically, but it wouldn't fix chronic fatigue. You know what I mean? I mean, right. All the other symptoms would remain, would they not?
Okay, what happens with the medications is it can provide some people some relief, and it tends to be more temporary. These are alive, a lot of clients who've come to me on these types of drugs. And over the long term, however, the drug starts to backfire. So they start to get some debilitating symptoms from these types of medications. So they end up developing things like obsessive compulsive thinking, or they end up without any kind of sex drive at all. So they don't want these side effects from the drugs. So they want off the drugs, and they can't just come off the drugs overnight. They have to work with the doctor, and they have to do a lot of things to get themselves healthy enough in order so that they can come off the drug safely. But essentially, these drugs are being handed out like candy, and doctors, unfortunately, are not trained in biochemistry or nutrition, so they don't understand that there is a nutritional basis for these types of conditions. What a
drag. Pam Colleen joining us on the program. Quick break. We'll come back. Talk a little bit more about CFS and how to keep our brain working optimally, how to keep our brain working optimally for all sorts of things. But it was interesting about Alzheimer's, and you talked about symptoms you had, which were similar because you suffered from CFS. So we'll talk about that when we come back, 16 minutes after 11 o'clock. Pam Colleen's my guest, and this is News Talk 1290 CJBK in London and News Talk 610 CKTB in Niagara. 20 minutes after 11 o'clock, this is News Talk 610 CKTB, News Talk 1290 CJBK. Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant from London, joining us. Before we get back to CFS, Pam, what are you holding classes this summer? What are you doing this summer for people who are interested in more of your stuff?
I don't tend to teach classes in the summer, but I will be teaching again this fall, winter, and spring. So I do update the announcement of my classes on my website, on pamcolleen.com, and then I put it on upcoming events. Or I have a Facebook page where I also post any lectures I might be giving.
All right. So your CFS, chronic fatigue syndrome, started exhibiting itself when?
I actually collapsed in my early 20s. And there was a severe trigger for it just before I collapsed. The way that my chronic fatigue started was different than a lot of people out there, because for most people, it's a slow and gradual degradation in terms of their energy and brain function and so on. With me, I was living in a moldy apartment. I was traveling overseas for 2 years after university, and I was living in a moldy apartment, and I didn't understand how incredibly toxic mold was at the time, and it was black mold. And after several months of living in that apartment, of course, it just completely depleted my immune system, and I ended up with a very severe infection. And that was the trigger for me. It was almost like one day I was fine, the next day I collapsed. And after that, I just couldn't escape the fatigue. I thought it was something that was going to be temporary, and unfortunately, it was unrelenting. It lasted for, like I said, most of my 20s and my 30s, and I tried a lot of, you know, hocus pocus in the many, many years that I was trying to get well. And I know that there's a lot of hocus pocus out there, a lot of people with very good intentions, good people, trying to help people overcome these kinds of conditions. And I can't tell you how incredibly difficult it is to undo the damage of decades and decades of toxicity, if you will. It can take 3, 4, 5 years to undo the type of damage people have been doing to themselves, and not just in terms of potential environmental exposures, but also nutritional as well.
Did you know immediately, or when did you know that you, or when did you suspect that the mold was the trigger for it?
I think it was quite immediate.
Okay.
You know, it
wasn't looking back, 10 years ago, it was probably the mold. You were like, this is not, I should not be here.
Yeah, it was bad. I mean, I knew that there was something wrong, and but I hadn't put two and two together. It would have been in hindsight, of course, more so than, you know, right away, because, of course, you know, when you sign a lease to an apartment, you don't really understand that the mold, like everything looked fine when you moved in, the mold grew eventually. So, but 6 months exposure is all it took.
And what's interesting now, though, and totally sidetracked this conversation briefly, though, if you ever watch one of those home improvement shows or whatever, you know, Brian Baumler or Mike Holmes or whatever, and if they ever find mold, they're like, we got to get rid of it. We got to get it out of here. And how we're so much more aware of the dangers of mold now than we were when we probably knew, oh, that's not good. But we probably thought not good from a, well, don't touch it. Or don't, you know, we didn't know from, you can actually breathe it in. The spores are toxic to our body. Now we're so much more aware. Back then, I don't know if we were.
No, we didn't know that much back then. I learned this gradually over the years. I did study a lot in terms of environmental toxicology on my own. I studied that out of interest because I had so many triggers. So if I walked into a moldy place, or if I was smelling perfume, or walking down a detergent aisle in a grocery store, you know, anything environmental also used to knock me on my can. So I had to learn how to avoid those things. Now, the good news is I don't react anymore. Now I'm fine. You know, I can go into a room and somebody could be wearing the most toxic of all perfumes and it doesn't bother me anymore. I can walk down a detergent aisle in a grocery store and it doesn't bother me anymore. So my multiple chemical sensitivities that I used to have are also gone. So
hold on a second.
You can rebuild these are all manifestations of a very, very weak digestive system and a weak nervous system, a weak immune system. I mean, I was set up from the get-go. When I look at my diet growing up, of course, my diet was absolutely atrocious. So it's no wonder I collapsed when I was exposed to that mold. The mold for me was the last straw, so to speak. My cup was already full, but when I was exposed to that mold, it was the final trigger for me to collapse with the chronic fatigue.
How have you ever talked to David Perlmutter The author of Grain Brain?
No, I've been trying to contact him to invite him on Andy's show in London, and I guess he's just so busy.
All right, and so this was released last September, and I think I saw him actually, and don't judge me for this, I think I saw him on a Dr. Oz show once, one of the only Dr. Oz.
Yeah,
I know, and he was one of the only Dr. Oz shows I've ever seen. I was like, oh yeah, this guy, I've heard of him. And it was fascinating because here's a doctor and a neurologist, and he looks at the what, and you talk about this a lot, how the grain affects the brain, hence the title Grain Brain, and how damaging it is to it.
Right. And here you see another doctor who is coming on board and saying that the carbohydrate diet, this carbohydrate-rich diet that we've been on, is affecting us not just physically but mentally, cognitively as well. So we're seeing more and more doctors come on board saying we have to return to a diet high in animal fat if we want to expect to have good brain function.
And is that what eventually you did in terms of getting, you know, helping CFS?
That's right. So I had to return to eating a diet high in animal fat. And unfortunately, when I initially collapsed with chronic fatigue, I turned to more carbohydrates in the diet, thinking that, oh, fruits and vegetables are healthy, therefore I'm going to eat lots and lots of them. And unfortunately, that was the wrong direction to take. Of course, I would have been raised on a near-vegetarian diet as a child, because when you think about the average diet today, they're waking up in the morning, they're having a bowl of cereal, so it's carbohydrates, maybe some skim milk, so there's hardly any animal fat. And then you see maybe a glass of orange juice, so no animal fat there. And then lunch might be a sandwich made out of very thin deli meat, which hardly has any animal protein or any animal fat in it. So there's still a very low-fat diet. And then at dinner, some people might just have pasta for dinner. If they're lucky, they might have a steak or chicken or something more complete. But, my diet was near vegetarian growing up. I had hardly any animal fat in my diet in the grand scheme of things. And so it's no wonder I collapsed with chronic fatigue. In the 1970s, Tom, the low-fat diet hit its hiatus in the 1970s. And in the 1980s, that's when we start to see a wave of people collapsing with chronic fatigue, more depression, more mood disorders in general. So it's no wonder we see this collapse, this mental collapse in society today based on this newfangled low-fat diet.
All right, let me ask you.
Thankfully, Dr. Perlmutter and other doctors are coming forward saying, let's go back to the way we used to eat when we enjoyed our animal fat and didn't have, you know, butter phobia, red meat phobia, egg phobia, any of those phobias.
All right, let me squeeze in one question. Texter wants to know, can you ask her if she's heard of the 8-week challenge? And what do you think of that diet?
I don't think I know that diet.
All right. Next time we'll connect on it then.
Yeah, I think it sounds vaguely familiar. But
all right. And, oh, here's another one. Is it true that walnuts are good for depression?
Well, again, it's not going to provide you with the long-chain fatty acids that would be coming from animal fat. So be careful when you hear this kind of nutritional information. What you need to look at is the diet in its entirety. And so breakfast, lunch, and dinner in its entirety is what you need to consider in terms of getting enough of the nutrients to support your nervous system, your immune system, brain function, and so on. So essentially one of the bottom lines I like to teach my students is that about 70% of your calories should be coming from animal fat. So that's just 3 square meals a day. Before World War II, we sat down, we ate 3 square meals a day. We had a bacon and egg style breakfast, a meat and potato style lunch and dinner, and we got about 70% of our calories from animal fat, and we were much, much healthier then than we are today.
PamKaleen.com is the website. Have yourself a great weekend.
Thanks, Tom. You too.
29 minutes after 11 o'clock. Quick break in the program when we come